Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, The Downfall of Sabari Muni, text number 47. Yad gar hastayam tu samviksha sapta dvipaviti pati vishmitak sambam ajahat Sarabhama Sriya Vitam Yat He whose Garhasyam Family life, household of life To but Sarviksha Observing Saptadvipa Vati pati Mandata, who was the king of the entire world consisting of seven islands. Vismita was struck with wonder. Stambam, pride due to the prestigious position. Ajahat, he gave up. Sarvabhauma, the emperor of the entire world. Sriya Anvitam, blessed with all kinds of opulence. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Mandata, the king of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, was struck with wonder when he saw the household opulence of Sabari Muni. Thus he gave up his false prestige and his position as emperor of the world. Purport. Everyone is proud of his own position, but here was an astounding experience in which the emperor of the entire world felt himself defeated in all details of material happiness by the opulence of Sabari Muni. As it explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Amari Dvam Nirgunadvat, Anambi Dvam, Amari Dvam Adambi Dvam, Himsa Shanti Arjumam, Acharya Pasanam Socham, Stiryam Atma Vinigraha, Indriyarte Shuvairagyam, Anahankara Evacha, Janma Mriti Jaravyadi, Dukha Dosha Nudarshanam. So this is the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, called the nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. And this particular verses explain what knowledge is. So generally people think knowledge means something technical or technology, that if you know how to build a better mousetrap, then you're knowledgeable. Or if you know how to do some particular skill, then you're considered to be knowledgeable. But knowledge, according to the Vedic literature, begins with humility. Because after all, since we're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of here in size, it would be extremely difficult if we actually realized our position not to be humble. Could you imagine if you suddenly walked outside your body and you looked into the mirror and you couldn't see yourself anyhow? You needed even a microscope couldn't find you. I'm lost, where am I? Someone takes a microscope and looks through, I still can't see you. So we're infinitesimal. And what we think is ourselves, namely this body, is simply a gift of the material nature called illusion. And it could be a gift of the spiritual nature. We could be situated in the spiritual energy, in the divine energy, but then we realize how insignificant we are. That's the difference between being situated in Maya and being situated in Daivi Prakriti. In Daivi Prakriti, there's no chance of thinking ourselves to be this body, and therefore there's no chance of taking credit for either being the body or for the abilities or activities that the body can perform. And what to speak of the opulence. Now here at Mandata, he's the ruler of the seven islands. So it's not seven islands off the coast of Croatia. It's seven islands means, as I said yesterday, Bhumandala, which is inconceivable. But then again, how much can we even conceive? Prabhupada would always give the example of the frog in the well. When the frog was, his friend came after visiting the Atlantic Ocean and said, "My dear friend, I just saw the Atlantic Ocean and it's so big." So his friend the frog said, "Well, how big was it?" He said, "No, it's so big you can't even imagine." So his friend who's lived in the well, the frog, was thinking, "Well, let me demonstrate how big I think the Atlantic Ocean is." So he puffed himself up. "Is it this big?" No, it's much bigger than that." "Is it that big?" No, it's much bigger." "Is it that big?" And then the frog in the well exploded. So similarly with our limited imagination, we try to imagine, even to imagine what Bhumandala is actually like is beyond our conception. And what to speak of the, if you take one little dot on a page and you draw a line something like 14 kilometers away from that one little dot, that's the coverings of this universe. And that one little dot is the inside of where we're living. So we should know we're well covered, we're well wrapped up in the it's rather cozy being in the universe. And this universe that we're in is just like one mustard seed in a whole bag of mustard seeds. As I gave the example before, and we're the smallest of the universe. Our Brahma has four heads, and in some universes he has 10 heads, some universes which are proportionally bigger than ours. Brahma has 100 heads, or 1,000 heads, or 1,000,000 heads, or 10 million heads. So there are universes where are millions of times bigger than our universe. So even Lord Brahma, when he came to visit Krishna at Dwarka one day, because after all, when the word got out, Krishna is on this planet, then everyone wanted to visit him, all the demigods especially. So one day, Brahma came to the door of Dwarka, and he knocked on the door, and the doorman came and saw him and said, "What would you like?" He said, "I'd like to see Krishna." He said, "Who are you?" He said, "What do you mean, who I am?" "I'm Brahma." "Oh, okay, I'll tell Krishna." So he went back, and Krishna said, "Who's there?" He said, "Brahma." "Which Brahma? What do you mean? Which Brahma?" I'll go and ask him, "Which Brahma?" So he went back and asked Brahma, "My dear Brahma, Krishna would like to know which one are you." "What do you mean, which one I am? There are more than one Brahma. I'm the Brahma of the universe. I'm here, four heads, four." "Okay, I'll tell him you're the four-headed Brahma." So he went back and told Krishna, "It's the four-headed Brahma." "Oh, okay, four-headed Brahma. Okay, tell him to come." With the Kumaras and everything. "Yeah, those little Kumaras, right. Okay, tell him to come in." So four-headed Brahma came in, talked to Krishna about the problems he had. Everyone goes and talks to someone about their problems. Krishna said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of the demons. It's all right, Brahma, I'm on your side." And then Brahma said, "I just have one question," before he left, he said, "I have one question, my dear Lord." He said, "You asked, which Brahma am I? Are there more than one Brahma in this universe?" So then Krishna, by his mystic power, called the Brahmas from the different universes. And some of them came, they had 1,000 heads, some of them, as I said, had 10,000 or 1,000,000 heads, were 10 million heads, and they were all surrounded by Shivas, proportionally bigger. And Brahma was like a little insect compared to all the other Brahmas. And they were all bowing down. And each Brahma, he thought he was the only one there, except for our Brahma. He was seeing all the other Brahmas, but each Brahma thought that Krishna alone had called him. And they all bowed down, their helmets, 10 million helmets hitting the ground, makes a big noise. So Brahma was like humbled, we could say. Because we'd say, oh, it's just a story. I'm like, nothing's going to make me humble. I'm beyond that. But Brahma was our Brahma, who created the whole universe, was humbled by that experience. So sometimes we have to be humbled. Because humility is the beginning of knowledge. If we're puffed up, which is a word we used to use in, I don't know if it's a common word outside of ISKCON, being puffed up. Do they use that in Spain? In the Peru?
Inflado.
Inflado. So, being puffed up by our false prestige, that's why we're in trouble in the material world. Now, just becoming humble, I'm so humble, I'm so humble, kick me, I'm humble. Walk on me, I need someone to walk on me so I can realize how humble I am. As one devotee was telling Prabhupada, 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 I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada's response was, you're not the most anything. And another devotee said, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, if you're the most fallen, why don't you do something about it? So it's not enough to be artificially humble. Just like Arjuna, when he saw the universal form, he naturally became bewildered. And he said, Sakye kimat me ko bhavan ukarupo mosudhe deva vraprasida. That, my dear Lord, I was being your friend, I lie down in the bed with you, I was dining with you, we joked together. You know, now I see how great you are, and I hope I didn't make any offense. Because unless we see how great someone is, then we're going to become familiar with them, and at least in the material world, we start treating them like an ordinary person. Which means that I'm actually as good, if not better, than you are, and therefore you have nothing to tell me. The only one I listen to is my television set. I'm surrendered to the internet. Whatever the one-eyed guru tells me, I accept without question. But everyone else is useless because I know their inner story. So unless we can find, of course, in the material world, people acknowledge others as being greater than they are, but only with the idea of taking their position eventually, getting trained up by them so one can take their position. Like the Nawab Hussein Shah. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami as Sakala Malik and Dabir Khas working under the government of the Nawab Hussein Shah in Bengal. So who was the Nawab Hussein Shah? How did he get his position? Well, he was a servant of the Nawab at that time. And when the Nawab was a little inattentive, he killed him and took his position. He acted as a servant, but when he got the opportunity, he became the master. Like one time, Prabhupada was walking up the hill with Hari Griva in New Vrindavan. Hari Griva was helping Prabhupada up the hill. If you've ever been to West Virginia, it's an ocean of hills. And New Vrindavan was situated on hill, in a hill, very hilly region. That's why Hari Griva and Kirtananda at that time, Maharaj, went there. They were trying to get away from everyone, including the devotees. So they decided to go to this place in West Virginia because no sane person would ever want to go there. As a matter of fact, the first time I went there in 1969 to see Srila Prabhupada, when we finally got there after walking through mud for 2 hours with some other devotees, the car had to drop us off because there was so much mud the car couldn't make it through the mud. So finally we reached the hill where the temple was, which was a shack, and Prabhupada was living in the attic on top of the shack. And another devotee named Bhakti Bill, who became Bhagavan Das, we went up to see Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, as soon as he saw me, he smiled at me and said, "So, how do you like our jungle?" Because it was a jungle. So Hari Griva and, as I said, Kirtananda Maharaj had went there. And it was all hills. So Prabhupada, one day, Hari Griva was helping Prabhupada come up one hill. And as soon as Prabhupada got up the hill, immediately threw Hari Griva's arm away and said, "Go away, I don't need you anymore." So Hari Griva was shocked. And then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Well, actually," he said, "this is just like the Mayavadis. They take help of their guru, and then as soon as they get up, they become self-illuminated with the help of the guru, they throw the guru away. I don't need you anymore. Now I'm God. What do I need you for?" So they act very humble. "Guruji, help me, help me, help me. Ah, get away. I don't need you." It's like in West Bengal, every year they have Kali Pooj. It's a big, big festival. They sacrifice literally thousands of goats for Kali. If you like goat meat, it's a big day. And there's a big festival of music and, you know, handing out sweets also. Go with the goat meat. And finally, when the festival is over, they take Kali and throw in the ocean. "We don't need you anymore. Thanks a lot." Get away. So that's the material world. Everyone is pretending to be someone that they're not and trying to become more someone that they've never, that they're not anyhow. Whoever we are, we're pretending to be. We're hoping to become someone else that someone else is pretending to be. Therefore, we take their help to take on another false role in the material world so we can get more puffed up. There's even a religion where they proclaim that you can become, if you follow our religion strictly, then they make you the head of the universe. Maybe you get 4 heads in your next lifetime. And if you're really a good Brahma in your next lifetime after that, then they give you another universe to control also. So you get 5 heads. You get an extra head in the next lifetime. This way, multi-marketing, you can eventually become a big, big Brahma. Now you're only a little Brahma. You can become a big, big Brahma. And it goes on eternally. You just expand your heads and your ego, and you can become bigger and bigger. So that's the material world. Everyone is dissatisfied with their present arrangement and hoping in the future it'll expand so their false ego can expand with it. Now our philosophy, as I said, we're 1/10,000th the size of tip Aaron size, and therefore whenever most people hear it, they'd rather go to sleep. This is not what they came to class to hear. And this is not what they come to this universe to hear about. You don't hear about in the newspaper that actually we've discovered that there's a soul and we're all souls and we're all only 1/10,000th the size of tape Aaron's size. Bad news for everyone. We've discovered who you actually are, and we've discovered you're so small that you're insignificant. Yeah, great, fantastic, just what I wanted to hear. I'm eternally insignificant. Wow, what news. I feel so good now. Now people say, oh, this ridiculous newspaper, burn everything, you know. Where's the scientists? You know, throw them in the ocean. So no one came to the material world to try to feel themselves insignificant. Everyone comes to puff up their ego so we can become something we're not. But when God comes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, he comes to feel himself insignificant. So God comes to enjoy feeling insignificant, and we come to try to enjoy becoming God. That's the difference between ourselves and God. That when we feel insignificant in relationship to Krishna, at least, then actual love can be there and appreciation. If you feel yourself great, who can you appreciate? If you're above everyone, you're the greatest, no one can compete with you, then how can you actually appreciate anyone? Everyone is subordinate to you. How can you love anyone if you think all my opulences are so great, everyone should love me, then how are you going to be able to love, how can we love anyone? If we think I'm greater than everyone, who's there to love? Everyone should just love me. But God doesn't feel like that. Krishna feels himself. When one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then Krishna becomes a devotee of his devotee. Even God doesn't want to feel puffed up. Therefore, he has the gopis who are always criticize him, keep him in his place. And he feels good when Mother Jasoda chastises him and tells him, you've been naughty, you know, I'm going to tie you up with a rope. He loves it. He feels, when he feels humble, then his love expands. And therefore he loves it when his devotee takes him as insignificant. And in the material world, we hate it if anyone in the least amount disrespects us. We can't, whoever we think we are, this body. If someone criticizes anything about the body, we become disturbed. You don't like the way I smell? Let's step outside, we'll settle it there. And if someone praises this body or anything in relation to this body, our mind or our seemingly intelligence, then we immediately become proud and puffed up and say, yes, is it recorded so I can hear it again? There's nothing, even we chant Hare Krishna, but actually when we hear the holy name, we try to develop some appreciation for it, but if we hear our name proclaimed in a positive way, immediately our ears expand and say, wow, that's nectar. Say it again. 16 rounds of it. Therefore, the material world is made in such a way as to, somehow or another, induce within us some form of humility. So some form of appreciation, because even we can't appreciate anything or anyone, we get, as Prabhupada said, we get a dog, so we can appreciate it. Here's my devotee, it loves me. I love it too. So before we get to that stage, we should try to appreciate Krishna. Try to appreciate Krishna's devotees, because we can't see Krishna. Try to appreciate devotional service, how the holy name and Krishna are non-different, how some devotees are engaged in the material world trying to spread Krishna consciousness in spite of all the impediments. Try to appreciate that. And then the result is that we'll actually, Krishna will reciprocate with us. And gradually as we realize how wonderful everything else is, we won't feel ourselves so important anymore, that we have to maintain our false prestige we have to work so hard to maintain our prestige and our paraphernalia and everything else, which is nothing but a burden for us. Trying to maintain an illusory energy, identity, and the illusory energy is quite a burden, especially since we're going to lose it very shortly. So trying to maintain something that we're going to definitely we're going to lose is quite a burden. So on one side, we're using all our energy to maintain our false prestige and the things that create our false prestige. And on the other side, we know we're going to lose everything, so it's quite a burden for the soul to work so hard for nothing. And therefore, this is the birth of all the philosophies like voidism, existentialism, Marxism, everything, just to somehow or another figure out how we can live in this place, temporary place, and feel that there's some reason behind it outside of Krishna consciousness. Trying to make people feel good that they're working so hard for nothing. Make them feel good about it. On the other hand, Krishna consciousness reveals our real position and that we should feel good about becoming the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, because then we'll actually be able to love everyone. And therefore life will become meaningful, at least in terms of actually bhakti, in the spiritual energy, daivi prakriti. Then we'll actually feel that we can glorify others, because we'll see how wonderful they actually are, how wonderful the souls are, how wonderful Krishna is. Then we'll actually feel good. We won't have to spend our lives trying to maintain an illusory identity, which ultimately goes nowhere. Shravam evahi kevalam. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Yes.
Okay. Hare Krishna. We heard that material qualities are perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So how it is connected with proud? How is proud connected with this?
I don't know how proud is connected with that, but I mean, everything here appears to be eternal to us at the moment, but is all temporary. And in this temporary existence, we're in a body, and the body is made in the image of Krishna, at least the human form of life. And while we're in the body, we imagine ourselves to be somehow or another in a drama, a pastime, a leela going on, where I'm the hero or the heroine. And in that pastime, I have so many rasas. I have my friends, my lovers, my servants, my paraphernalia. And it's a whole leela we go through. Just like Krishna's leela in the spiritual world with Radha and Krishna and their friends, the cowboys, the gopis, Mother Jasoda. So Krishna is going through his leela and we think we're going through our leela. And whatever happens, we're the hero or the heroine. It may be sometimes a ghastly rasa. It may be laughing rasa. It may be fearful rasa. It may be madhurya rasa. 5 direct and 7 indirect rasas. So we go through it and we're imagining ourselves in leela, that's all. And every leela, we're the hero. Like Krishna is the hero. And even if you become a dog, it's still, that's your leela. And everyone else is still paraphernalia. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Guru Maharaj, for the class. I was wondering, you talk about humility and how can we develop humility when we don't have much interest to listen?
Well, Maya is there to help us. Krishna has created a perfect world as soon as we don't, if we don't, because we don't, we, it's not that we don't have the propensity to listen, we haven't had the propensity since time immemorial. And therefore we've made so many mistakes, which we think are, whatever, we've done everything wrong since time immemorial, in the sense that as soon as we forget Krishna, whatever we do is wrong. And the material nature is made in such a way as we get a reaction for it. Either at the present moment, I mean, this material body itself is a reaction. So we don't have to worry, because as long as we're in the material nature, if we don't become Krishna conscious, then we have to, there's a reaction, namely old age, disease, death, to remind us the fact that we haven't surrendered to Krishna. Then there's, of course, the threefold miseries to help us daily. So if we see it correctly, if we get a little knowledge and see that this is a reminder, the fact that we're not surrendered to Krishna, then it's good. Otherwise, Maya will keep on kicking us until we become a rabbit and then a bug. And gradually we get kicked through 8,400,000 species of life until we get back to the human form of life, where we get kicked again until we finally think, well, maybe it's a good idea, maybe we should listen this time. It's taken a long time to get back.
I spoke with many people about this, and they say, I don't want to born like an animal. I don't want to born like an animal. That will be terrible. I want to be human. If I born again, I want to be human. And I say to them, well, work for that. No, you can. It's up to you.
Yeah, but most people can't understand what we're talking about. Because there's a big gap. I mean, Prabhupada spent years trying to tell us we're not this body. Just that little information, which is the most obvious thing we have. The thing that we've experienced most directly is the fact that we exist and that this body is changing. And still we can't accept it due to the power of our causeless unwillingness to surrender to Krishna. We want to be eternal but without Krishna. And we don't want to do what's necessary to become even eternal. To live and, you know, go through the process of acquiring real knowledge, eternal knowledge. Therefore, we want to live in the material world as eternal. Therefore, everyone's imagining, you know, therefore they're heroes, and the comic book heroes, Superman or whatever else, you know. People who don't have to do anything, that they're just like, they're eternal, and they can do all kinds of nonsense here eternally. That's what we'd like to be here. That's what people can understand. Some scientists coming along and giving us the pill so we can eternally do nonsense here. But to understand we're not this body, that's the beginning. That may, even for ourselves, makes us be a little introspective. Maybe there's something else besides myself in this world of some importance.
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj.
Anything else? Voila, Grantharaj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Kidai.